We're back. We got a star packed show tonight. We got one of the best attorneys in the state, one of the best attorneys in the Midwest. All right, I'm going to go as far as to say one of the best attorneys in the country coming on with us first, Ven Johnson. I'm excited to talk to my partner. And also, as a brother from another mother, Todd Perkins, he's going to be with us as well. We may talk a little bit about the retrial with Todd, a little bit about Jennifer Crumbly's request for bond. But there's a star-studded show tonight, a lot happening in our country and right here in Detroit as well. I look forward to it. We'll be back just after this. You know, I got to tell you, I have watched Ven Johnson for decades do his magic in court and have learned from him more than, you know, you could possibly imagine. It's always a privilege to have my brother on the show. I know he was gearing up for a major trial. And I think everybody out there, and I know we're adding on to, you know, well into the six figures of listeners. For everyone out there, he just had a case that dealt with governmental immunity. And if we don't solve this issue with governmental immunity, I hate to say this, there will be more delay and more stall and more time that citizens, ordinary citizens, will be without justice. But anyway, Van, you with me, my man?
I always am, brother. How you doing, Todd?
I'm great. I'm great. Not as good as you, but I'm, you know, I'm okay. So I saw you last week and you were telling me you were going to trial. You had the guns ready. You were going at it. Tell me what happened.
Well, Todd, we had a case that's been pending for 5.5 years.
Eesh.
And just to accentuate the point that you just made about governmental immunity, because this case involved it, just like you said, a normal case, Todd, pending in Macomb County Circuit Court, like we had this one, would take 1 to 2 years tops. I would be in trial in less than 2 years, Todd, and I would be, sooner or later, closing my file probably by the 2-year mark.
Right.
5.5 years, Todd. Mm. 5.5 years. But in any event, we got to trial yesterday in the veneer, for those of you out there, love that word, V-E-N-I-R-E, the veneer that all the folks who could possibly be our jurors were standing in the hallway, Todd, and we had one of those courthouse steps moments that I have to admit took me by surprise, but very happy for my client. We settled the case for $2.95 million yesterday.
Well into seven figures.
So,
what happened?
So we were... this is back October 25, 2019, Todd. My client had just dropped off her 10th grade son at Stevenson High School. She was a Sterling Heights family, and her son was going to the public school there, dropped him off. And when she came out of the parking lot and turned left on Dodge Park like she always did, what she did expect is there would be a police officer who was breaking multiple Michigan Motor Vehicle Code laws, meaning speeding, using the center turn lane as a passing lane, and slammed into her, causing her Escalade. So big SUV, the police car was a Tahoe, flipped her over, Todd, came to rest on the roof of her car.
Oh my gosh.
Crushing down, strikes her head, and ends up having a traumatic brain injury and multiple herniated disc in her neck, ultimately leading to 2 neck surgeries so far, 42 at the time of the crash, 48 now, and she has a life of pain. She will have a
never
life
be
of
the
surgeries.
Same. Yeah.
Never be the same. Never be the same.
So and that's just catastrophic. Yeah. And so
and guess who they blamed at the scene? Todd, guess who they blamed at the scene?
They blamed her.
You're going to have to guess. Yeah. How'd you know?
Yeah, yeah. Go get him.
It was her fault.
No sirens, no lights. No.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. And it's just, thank you for pointing that out. And Todd, obviously, former prosecutor, great defense lawyer, and you're a great friend of many prosecutors and excellent, fine police officers all across our state and country, Todd. And you know, the law is in Michigan. If a police officer needs to break the motor vehicle code, speeding, going in and out of traffic, et cetera. You know this, Todd, they have to have lights and sirens on. There's one exception to that. It doesn't apply here, so let's not even go into it. But that's what they have to have. He didn't, but for good reason, Todd, because it wasn't an emergency. He was responding to a crash that was a property-only crash with reports of no physical injury. So there's no reason for him to be out passing cars.
How fast was he going to knock an Escalade on its roof?
Well, okay, that's a very great question. So according to the download, the black box that we all know now because of airbags exist in all of our cars in this day and age, he was going 40 miles an hour was his top speed. It was a 35, but it's a school zone. He didn't need to be going 25. A lot of us don't know that law, Todd. I didn't until I looked it up for this case. The 25-mile-an-hour zones that we see, it's because the superintendent of schools in that jurisdiction wrote a letter to Michigan Department of Transportation and asked for the speed limit to be lowered. And in this particular jurisdiction, for whatever reason, that never happened. Yeah. So speed limit still was 35, but he, Todd, had his accelerator and his throttle 99%. So he was flooring it.
Oh, my gosh.
While he was passing.
What
in
time
a school
of day
zone,
is this?
It's the morning, Todd. It's 7:13. There was
kids
traffic
off.
Lined up to drop off the kids, Todd. And I got another news for you. Anybody ever dropped off kids at a high school? People drive like fools, right? You got mom and dad late for work. You got kids who are young drivers that are still, shall we say, inexperienced. I mean, who goes fast in a school zone ever, A, but B, when you know you've got inexperienced drivers and multiple accidents in that area? So, yeah, wow. Todd, it was bad. And we're just really very fortunate. We had great experts that were all lined up. I had an expert, Todd, coming, a guy you know from Florida, police policies and procedure expert, and he was flying in from Florida. I had another police expert and accident reconstructionist driving down from his home in Bay City. So we were fully locked and ready to roll, baby, but that's when it happens.
Well, we're going to come back. I want to talk to you about this is the change. This is what I want to. People don't understand that there is continuous appeals because they have the right to appeal where an ordinary average Joe doesn't. And I want to you got to explain that to the listeners when we come back just after this. The best we got with this Ven Johnson just after this. We'll be right back. We're back. We're back with none other than Ven Johnson. You see Ven all over the place. You see him fighting in the courtrooms. You see him, you know, one of the things that I think is perhaps one of the best qualities of a lawyer is someone who cares. Not someone that phones it in, not someone that has an answering service, not someone that, you know, directed here, there, or the other place. Ven's there, and he cares. Ven Johnson is on the other end of my line. Ven, so we're going to team up on a case. I have a case where Zaire and Lamar died in Flint. The firefighters lied in a report and basically said they searched this small 1,100 square foot home. The fire chief gets to the home, sees that this fire is primarily a smoke fire in an inner north wall. The fire department's about 500 yards away from this home. The fire chief, when he gets over there, says, hey, guys, knock out that air conditioner in the upstairs. Another firefighter goes up there, and he sees Lamar on the ground choking and coughing and Zaire in the bed. And both of them die 2 days later. Governmental immunity. I file my lawsuit. I'm ready to go. I want discovery. I want to take depositions. I want to catch them in their, you know, what this scrupulous, what happened in this case. And what happens? They automatically get a right to an appeal, file a motion 18 months later, just on the very first appeal, very first motion, which we won, which we, you know, the Court of Appeals quick, you know, eviscerated them in their opinion. But it took 18 months. Now, you know what's going to happen. So you have this case that you just got done telling, this tragic, ugly case of a police officer driving without siren lights in an intersection on a busy school-off drop-off day. in the morning, hits mom in her Escalade and puts her on the roof, and you're saying 5 years later. Explain to all the listeners throughout the Midwest right now, how come it takes so long when it normally, as you were pointing out before, it wouldn't take so long before for an ordinary citizen like you and me?
Right. 5.5 years. So what happens is, Todd, because of governmental immunity, which I obviously agree with you on, we have got to change. We've got to modify. I personally believe it should be thrown out. I think it's unconstitutional. Others think it just needs to be changed significantly. Something needs to be done. But as of right now, no one has the guts to do it. None of our three branches of government have stepped up to take even a whack at this, which is, to me, appalling. In any event, so what happens is, just like in your case, they file a motion right away after the case is filed. And the judge, of course, says, no, Johnson has pled this the right way. This looks like a case that should move on its path to trial. And then they immediately appeal that. The judge rules it my way. And then immediately appeal that. And like you said, that's a year to a year and a half wait now.
Ugh.
And then, of course, the Court of Appeals unanimously says, oh, yeah, judge was right. Go back to the trial court. We go back to the trial court. We get busy with discovery, taking depositions and so forth, like you do in any case. And then they file another motion, say, okay, now that all the evidence is in, this case should be thrown out of court again. The judge says, no, it should go back to trial. It's Court of Appeals, round two, takes another year to year and a half, Todd. And, of course, they say, judge was right, case should go on to trial. That's now 3 years they've eaten up. Then you got to go another time, because they appealed a second time, saying in the second Court of Appeals decision, there was this one line to them meant that they win, when, of course, they didn't win. And they go back to the Court of Appeals for a third time. And so all of this takes time. And what people got to understand is, a part of governmental immunity. So, Johnson, you're complaining about governmental immunity, but you just settled this case for just shy of $3 million. So it must not exist. No, it does exist. But as Todd Flood knows, it's an exception to governmental immunity. If you get hit in a government owned vehicle where the government allowed someone to drive it and that person operated the vehicle negligently, it's one of the few exceptions that exist.
Right, right.
So that we pled. But what another thing that people don't know about, Todd, you do, is, and you're experiencing it right now in that case, is once you have governmental immunity as an issue, if the government, the defendant, files a motion saying, judge, throw this case out because of governmental immunity, even if they're completely wrong and it's, in my opinion, frivolous, the Michigan Court of Appeals has to hear the case, because
right,
it's an appeal as of right. So again, what Todd Flood's saying, ladies and gentlemen, is of course always 100% true. If I sued Todd Flood for, God forbid, he hurt my client in a car, and Todd filed a motion right out of the gate when I sued him saying this case should be thrown out of court, and the judge would say, no, it goes on to trial, Todd Flood doesn't get a right to appeal. He can ask the Court of Appeals, will you please look at this? And they're going to tell him no in about 98% of all cases. So this does not happen except in governmental immunity cases, Todd, as you know.
Yeah.
And the problem is, the governmental agencies, and I'm not just talking to state, county, federal, city, they all are doing this now, which elongates, it doubles, it triples time. I got a case, Todd, you know about it. It's a snowmobile case where
right,
my client had a state worker who pulled right in front of him on a trail, right in front of him, running a stop sign up there in the UP. My client, I talked to him today, Todd, they filed an appeal. State of Michigan filed an appeal a third time. We're over 7 years on that case, Todd.
That's crazy.
7 years, Todd.
Yeah. So for Joe Sixpack out there, you don't have that right. And the government can be so egregious, so wrong. And there is not a balancing test. They get an automatic right to appeal. I normally, law and order, stand up for the cops, stand up for what's right, fight for the police, but when the right is right, wrong is wrong. In these particular cases, we're wasting taxpayer dollars and clogging up a system that should be unclogged, and there's brilliant minds, but they can't figure this out? This is something that is so egregious. I got a case right now. I'm suing the state of Michigan, strip searching women and videotaping them. I got a male corrections officer in a birth of a 21-year-old having a child in prison. He videotapes the birth. It's unbelievable. Now, I'm going to have to go through what Ven just explained to everybody, which is crazy to me. You know, so at the end of the day, Ven, there's got to be something. And you're fighting the battles and standing up for the rights of the citizens in the state of Michigan and actually throughout the country. There's got to be something that
I agree with you,
needs
brother.
To be done, you know, that brilliant minds can come up with these egregious acts, that we don't waste taxpayer dollars and we don't, you know, have some mercy for the victims of these, you know, obviously tortious cases. So, my man, I love you, brother. You're the best.
Love you too, brother. Thank you, man.
I'll talk to you soon. We'll be right back just after this. You know, I got to say, this world for which we live, there's a lot of crazy stuff going on. And, you know, one thing that is happening over in the Middle East, you know, oh, my goodness gracious me. I don't know what the answer is over there. And what's happening around our country with, you know, the uprisings here and there, that stuff to me, I don't know. It's crazy in and of itself. But the courts are continuing to go on and on and on. And all of the turmoil, we still have to walk into court. We still have to carry our cases, know them backwards, forwards, and none other than one of the best attorneys in running for mayor in our great city of Detroit, none other than Todd Perkins, my brother from another mother. How are you, my friend?
I am well. I'm just leaving a forum, and, you know, it's so great to hear from you and your producer. And I'm doing great. I'm running through the city and getting ready to go change and put on my Perkins for the People t-shirt and go knock a couple doors before it gets too late.
You got to do that, man. You got to get the organic
absolutely.
Vote. Yeah. You got to get out there and see the people, unlike a lot of others. So tell me what's new in the race? What's going on in the race? What do you see? What's the skullduggery? What is politics like in our city?
Well, I mean, politics is in your city is, you know, I see, well, one thing I can say, I can decry foul with the Detroit Chamber of Commerce. I mean, I have a belief that they don't want to hear from me. They don't want me on the platform, because anytime I'm called to perform, as far as performance, as far as debating, as far as presenting the issues in a cogent, you know, understandable and articulable way, I there's no one matching me. But more importantly, they can't match my experience. And, you know, as
right.
an individual who's been a city attorney for Highland Park, current city attorney in Inkster, and the city attorney or an attorney that represents Detroit City Council, I understand budgets. I understand administrations. And I understand how to get things done, as I've done in building, you know, I'm the only self-made CEO and having built a firm. What I have done has been a leader in everything I've done, whether it be the community efforts that you've supported me in, whether it be in the practice of law, in the firm that I've built, and some of the stellar lawyers and talent that I've had the pleasure of nurturing and seeing them go so high into the stratosphere, you know, or whether, you know, working with organizations, whether working with administrations and also working between administrations and city council. So all of those things are things that none of the other candidates, you take the sum total of all their experiences and they don't equal what I could do. And I have a concern that, you know, that I may not be the flavor that people savor, but I know I am the one that the people want. And that I'll say that, you know, when I say the flavor that people savor, I'm talking about other institutions and,
sure.
and other areas. But the people of the city of Detroit, those are the people that vote. And those are the people who I'm contacting. And those are the people I'm walking those streets and knocking on those doors and talking up the literature that you're handing out and being able to answer the tough questions.
What are some of the tough questions?
Well, you know, one question that there's no answer. And see, as a lawyer, you understand this. We don't promise any particular result. I actually cringe when I hear politicians saying, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, rather than saying, this is the plan that we intend to do this. We intend, you know, they sell themselves on promises and things that lawyers like you and I, who have an ethical obligation, cannot do.
Right.
You know how we have people who, they'll pay us more money if we give them a guarantee.
Tell them what they want to hear. Don't ever, ever do that. Don't ever tell. No, you tell the truth. You be honest.
And people will respect that. People will respect you telling the truth.
Yeah.
And people will be honest. And so one of the biggest things, and there's no answer to it right now, are the retirees in the city of Detroit. You know, so, you know, the retirees, it's off the backs of the retirees that really we were able to make the city solvent by taking money from them. You know, my mom was one of those retirees who suffered the clawback. She worked in the Detroit Public Library. She was a clerk at the Detroit Public Library and retired from there. And she suffered the clawback. She also suffered
during the bankruptcy.
During the bankruptcy,
right.
And that's what got the city through. And we still owe those people. And those people are still around. Those are faces that, you know. And one of the things I tell them, I say, look, I don't have an answer right now, but I want to know how money is spent, where it was spent, and whether we could have done better, and what we will do better going into the future. Because, you know, those are the people. You know, I want to give each and every one of them an IOU. You know, not necessarily with a date on it, but giving them an IOU, because when you tell people and you look them eye to eye and tell them, hey, I'm sorry that this happened, and acknowledge that they are, you know, you are the reason why we as a city are progressing.
So
because of what we took to you.
It's simple Joe Sixpack downriver language. I took money from you in your retirement to be solvent in a bankruptcy, and you worked all those years so that you could have an honest life and income to last you in retirement. But I took it from you just so the rest of the citizens in our city of Detroit could survive. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
The fact of the matter is that, you know, they're still, you know, they're still out the pocketbook, still out the money. And, you know, you don't hear them complaining. You don't hear that going on. But what are you going to do for it? Yeah, you know, one thing that I think, and I just got done telling this to I was brought in to do an investigation of a university where there was some unfortunate, ugly stuff that happened. And I said, you know what? This is what I have seen over and over and over again. The cover-up and the sweeping under the rug hurts you more than if you're transparent, tell the truth, let the victims come up and redress with non-economic ways. Cure the way of how this happened by bringing in extra aides or bringing in better supervision or bringing in more accountability. But be transparent about it. Be honest about it. What you don't see oftentimes, and you see it right now because your boots on the ground, you're seeing it out there, is people just saying whatever people want to hear and not being truthful.
That's the law too. You know, but at the same time, the good thing about the law is most lawyers don't operate like that. And we have a fairly small circle that we can identify those individuals, and we will out them big time. And, you know, and you just mentioned a set of circumstances in which you're investigating and how people not being upfront and not being transparent at the beginning causes them worse issues. How many cases have we done that applied to? You know, and it's happening. It's happening in our city. It's happening in governments. It's happening all over the place. And I think it's a human it's a human frailty that some people suffer from.
Yeah, it is. All right, we got more to talk about. We got
Absolutely.
More issues. Yeah. So you stay right there with me. I'll be right back. We have a ton of listeners tonight. If we get fortunate, I might bring in one for a question or two. Anyway, we'll be right back just after this. You know, I'm looking at this Hamtramck case. It just keeps on percolating and percolating and coming up to the surface. My little town where I have so many friends, there's something that's going to happen there. I don't know what it's going to be. I don't know what it's going to be. Brother Todd, have you watched any of that? Seen any of that?
Right across the railroad tracks from where I stay. You know, I stay on the north end.
Yeah.
And right across the railroad tracks is Hamtramck. It's a city I've grown up next to. It used to, it does have a bustling downtown, but And when I was a kid, it was even more thriving than even today. Had a Federals over there. I don't know if you remember the store Federals, but
yeah.
You know, it was nice. And you know, it is troubling because I know a lot of officers, and there's a lot of closed lips. But I see what's happening. I mean, people being walked out of city council meetings.
The manager last night was walked out, or whatever. Maybe it wasn't last night, but he was walked out.
City council
meeting. I was like, how's that possible?
He wasn't there as the manager. He wasn't even there as the manager. He was there as a citizen. And one of the elected officials said that. Oh, it was the mayor that said that he felt uncomfortable and that he needed him to be removed.
I don't know about that one. It's an open meeting.
I don't either.
I don't know.
I think that's a violation.
Yeah,
it could be a violation. But
I'm not saying,
we're not going to say anything because knowing you or me, we might be called in to represent or officiate. So let's not make an opinion right now.
Yeah, a funny story. I'll tell you someday on the Flint matter. I was on the show, and I said something. I said, when I watched all that stuff go, I said, someone's going to jail on that. I had nothing to do with it. Next thing you know, I'm appointed.
Yeah.
Hey, did you follow any of this Reed trial?
Which one?
You know, the lady that was just found not guilty in Boston, killing the boyfriend. She didn't kill him. Obviously, she's found not guilty. Do you see any of that?
Well, that doesn't mean she didn't kill him.
Karen Reed.
She didn't commit a crime in doing so.
Right.
You know, so you know, it's a word game, but nonetheless, I mean, the jury has spoken. Actually, I just know about the case and I knew about the outcome. I did not follow it. You know, like you said, I've been kind of boots to the ground and, you know, still practicing a lot and getting ready to go to trial next week. But
what's your trial?
It is a lie. It is a lie. I have a father who is a father to these three kids, and it's horrible. And, you know, the mother is claiming an allegation of CSC. There's no DNA that comports with it. There's no expert that they have. In fact, their experts establishes that he didn't. You know, and we're in a situation that we still have to go to trial to prove my client's innocent. This is one in which it's not a word game where the proofs aren't there. He didn't do it, and it's just a shame that the law. You know, these are the inequities of law. These are the inequities that we are forced to have to fight. And, you know, we're going to bring the fight and we're going to bring this young man home. I mean, he's working and he's doing everything he's supposed to be doing. It's a longstanding case, but it is and it's not going to take long to do it because they only have one witness to support what she's the only one saying it. But all the other experts that they have that the government got are going to be my experts.
Well, you got to like that. You got to be a skilled trial lawyer when you can take the opposing team's experts and make them yours.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's one of those cases in which, you know, we'll put it to the, you know, we're going to put them to the test and I don't think they're going to pass.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah. It's just a tough case.
I can't imagine. I just got done doing a lengthy hearing for 3 days. I can't imagine
the one down in Adrian.
Yes, I can't imagine doing a case and running for mayor at the same time.
Well, you know what it is? It's a wonderful feeling because every day as mayor, I'm doing an opening and closing statement everywhere you go. You know, the public speaking, the engagement. You know, it is a certain sense of energy that you bring. And a certain sense of caring that you bring, the same thing you bring in the courtroom.
Right.
You know, you have to be yourself. You have to let people know, you know, that you're tangible, that people can touch you and people have access to you. And you let them know even in a court case. So, you know, it's that energy that continues to, you know, it duplicates itself or replicates itself in the afternoon as it does in the morning. And, you know, people like you and I, we work from sun up to sundown anyway. So, I mean, there's no difference. We're not even changing gears.
You know, that's true. That was true. You know, I was up.
How many times are we talking at about a case at 12:30 at night, and then the next thing you know, it's 4:35 in the morning, we're still talking about it, you know, getting three, four hours of sleep, and we go do it.
Yep. No, I was just doing it last night myself on a case I have that is, you know about, I've talked to you about. We're about to file. I'm sending it over to the city. It's Dwayne Williams.
Oh, yeah. No, that is an atrocity.
Yeah, Dwayne was locked up for 12 and a half years, and the documents were altered and manipulated.
And testimony,
and the perjury
just,
of the cop.
Not documents, but testimony. That's even worse.
Yeah, so that's one I worked on. You know, I was talking to Van Johnson earlier about governmental immunity and the tragedies of governmental immunity. This is one that should be resolved.
This will get beyond that, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. It's just the time of it.
No, but as mayor, I look and understanding because of the practice of the law, I do those cases that you have. I've seen those individuals. And you know what's striking about those individuals who were declared innocent and years were taken away from their life? I always envisioned. Once I started doing this work maybe 10 years ago, when I met those individuals that would be angry people, and they're not. They're right. They're so thankful to God that they found, you know, their freedom again. And I always felt like they would have this, you know, this chip on their shoulder. And the ones I've encountered and that had the blessing to meet and work for, they're not. They were just so grateful and thankful to God that they're alive. You know, they take it from the very basic perspectives. And when you work hard for them, they return it in appreciation. And, you know, there's some of them out here who, when they get out, they do the work of helping others who are getting out, our returning citizens. But as mayor, I intend to focus on those cases and look at them and give a hard look at those cases. Because you can, you know how, as lawyers, if the other side comes to you in a transparent way, you know your client, they'll be reasonable too. You know, so that you don't have these because you're looking for when you win, they're astronomical numbers that are going to be put against the city's budget.
Right.
Astronomical.
Right.
And coming to you face, you know, forward and moving in that particular direction along with the county. I mean, it's a great opportunity for the municipalities to work together to resolve that for you. But they've turned you down.
Well, that gets back to my original thoughts about being transparent and honest. We live in a forgiving society, you know. I mean, at the end of the day, if you can admit and say, yes, I did something wrong, right? And then on top of it, here, I'm going to save the taxpayers millions of dollars to resolve these cases, as opposed to put them through more time, waste of taxpayers' energies with all the citizens or all the lawyers working on the case, the paralegals working on the case. If you have it, if you have the bill of goods and you present it to the city and you present it to the county and you show it to them, you let them examine it. I got my guy out of prison. He was released because of the manipulation and Brady violation. Brady, for everybody, that just means exculpatory evidence that should have been turned over to the defendant, but it wasn't. In this particular case, these were documents. You know, this is the opening line of the case, a perjury, suborning of perjury, made an innocent man guilty for a crime that was never committed. That's the opening line of this lawsuit, right?
Let me make it a little bit better.
Yeah, you do it.
They lie. You know, just, you know, you're too smart. You're too smart sometimes. You know, when you get in that courtroom, you know, you talk where you talk from that. You know, like me from being from the North.
Oh yeah, no, I'm with
you.
You
know, you're gonna be in that jump. You're gonna jump in that jury box and tell them, cross your legs and tell them they lied. That's what they did.
That's my Gerald Evelyn move. How are we gonna resolve this? But anyway, this is the case where if you, as a mayor, and you said, I got a team of, you know, that is gonna review this case. Flood got the guy out, or Sato, I can't take the credit. Sato did yeoman's work, got a lot of this done for Dwayne, got him out. And I worked, I was the one that came in at the end and got the judgment to get him out. Then in turn, now I'm working on the case. If I had a team for the city or for the county and said, why are we going to waste all this time? Why are we going to waste? If I can settle it for X and save me $10 million, I'm doing it, right?
Let me tell you another story. You know, I was an expert witness in one of these cases for Wolfgang Mueller.
Yeah.
And this case was not as good as yours. And, you know, it had a little bit of holes in it, but it was some of the similar things. I mean, rather than take, you know, they offered $600,000-$700,000 of settlement. It was a $10 million judgment. $10 million.
There you go, man. And Wolf would have settled that case a long
way. He would have,
for a lot less.
But that's why you convene a group of lawyers and you have a trusted facilitator and just get the work done.
Amen to that. Yeah. Listen, my man, Godspeed to you. I love you, brother.
Thank you.
You
love
be
you
well.
Too, man.
All right. We'll be back next month with Behind the Bench.